Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, August 7th. MCH now offering a retail pharmacy. The story was written by Ruth Campbell. Medical Center Hospital recently opened a retail pharmacy at 319 Golder Avenue. Opened in October, it serves discharged patients, those who need patients' assistance, and regular customers. Hours are 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. 7 days a week. The phone number is 432-640-6333. The hospital did have a pharmacy previously from around 1997 to 2010, but it only served hospital employees, Director of Pharmacy Erica Wilson said. Quote, "Even before the retail pharmacy, we had a little pharmacy inside of the main pharmacy that helped with indigent care, so a lot of patients' assistance for the community," Assistant Pharmacy Director Tony Lee said. Quote, "We used our residents and a couple of other staff members. They squeezed the time to make that work. We had a little area near the front of the entrance where we would dispense the meds, do counseling, and all that stuff. It was a very small patient assistance program based on the fact that we didn't have a lot of labor or people to handle it," Lee added. When they started thinking about a retail pharmacy, it was a three-pronged approach: helping the community, doing patients' assistance, and having another pharmacy for the employees where it's convenient. It also helps lower employee drug costs because the hospital is using its own labor to dispense medications, quote, "rather than somebody like CVS and Walgreens, who charges us for that labor," Lee said. Quote, "That was the second piece. The third focus is to make sure that the patients are coming out of the hospital are better taken care of because we have better communication between our pharmacy and the inside of our hospital than CVS or Walgreens or any other commercial pharmacy would," he added. Wilson said the HEB pharmacy that was in the Wheatley Stewart Medical Pavilion closed in September, right before the retail pharmacy opened in October. The MCH pharmacy has 7 full-time employees. Lee has been assistant pharmacy director for a year, but has worked at MCH for 3 years, including 2 as a pharmacy resident. He started his current role just before the retail pharmacy opened. Quote, "It was kind of the previous director and my little project that we got going," Lee said. Wilson started as a pharmacy resident in 2015 and has had multiple roles before becoming pharmacy director in August 2022. Lee said a lot of the retail pharmacy's customer base is built in because a good proportion of hospital employees use it. Quote, "Then we already had a lot of those indigent care patients from the previous program. Those guys obviously stayed with us as well. And the other part that comes with us fairly easily would be the people who are admitted into the hospital or go to the emergency room and they're getting their medications upon discharge. Some of those stay with us, and some of them will go to their regular pharmacy because it's more convenient afterwards. The 3 populations that we see a lot are the people that come from the hospital and then get their discharge medications and stay with us. The people who are our employees, where it's convenient for them to get the medications when they're going to and from work. And then the people who we do the indigent and patient assistance programs because we offer, I would think, the largest patient's assistance around this area," Lee said. Drug manufacturers have patient assistance with different criteria. Quote, "It takes the care coordination here and our patient's assistance tech to navigate and help the patients with that. But we also have a program where we pay a monthly fee, essentially, and they'll offer us certain medications that are very commonly used that are cheap generics. We can offer those for free for people who meet their criteria. Criteria are the manufacturers, criteria of this program, and then we have an in-hospital program for patients are getting discharged because we don't want them to be readmitted and to suffer complications. So we also offer help in that sense, which has its own specific criteria for how that works, which is why we need a patient assistant tech to kind of manage the complexity of the program. But there are multiple ways that we help indigent patients," Lee added. Wilson noted that the inpatient pharmacy and the retail pharmacy function independently. Quote, "It does feel like we're able to take care of our patients better because we have it from our inpatient and just that direct link to the outpatient," Wilson said. Lee said the pharmacy is removing barriers and restrictions to patients, whether they are employees, indigent, or discharged patients. Quote, "As you can tell, it's easier for us to work closely together between our main pharmacy and the hospital and our hospital-owned retail pharmacy. Commercial pharmacies with pharmacists that are hired for CVS or Walgreens, they're following policies and procedures that are made by Walgreens and CVS, and they're very restricted in what they're allowed to do. If a patient is needing something and they can't pay for the price of the medications, it's very difficult for them to help those patients. With us, that is not the case," Lee said. Wilson said they have told the doctors that the pharmacy cares about the same things they do because they are all part of the hospital. Quote, "We care about readmissions, length of stay, quality of care, and safety of care because our hospital cares about that," Wilson said. "For hospital employees, there is a locker where employees can request a prescription be filled, and it is left in a secure locker. The team confirms that they are willing to authorize payment over the payment or from a previous transaction. Quote, "Then our staff goes and delivers it to these lockers, and then you get a text message as the employee saying, 'Hey, it's ready in the locker. Scan this QR code or enter this code into the locker system,'" Wilson said. "One of the reasons MCH did this was to increase convenience for the staff and for overnight employees. Quote, "It's 24/7. The locker system is open," Wilson said. Odessa Soccer Association and YMCA Security among issues to be discussed with Odessa City Council Tuesday. The story was written by Kim Smith. The Odessa Soccer Association, a new asset management program, and YMCA Security will be among the top issues for the Odessa City Council Tuesday. During the council's 3 p.m. work session, Public Works Director Tom Kerr will ask the City Council to consider an asset management and work order program he believes will categorize, inspect, and manage the condition of the city's pipelines, valves, fire hydrants, and parks. The GIS-centric database system will also help them plan for maintenance and repair or replacement. Quote, "We could be better prepared to prevent failures, such as the 24-inch water main break of 2022, Kerr said in materials presented to the council. The proposed program is already being used by 32 Texas cities and 850 clients nationwide, Kerr said. Quote, "Staff proposal is to establish a budget for 5 years of $1 million, Kerr wrote. On June 13, 2022, a 24-inch water line that was more than 60 years old broke on 42nd and San Jacinto Streets. Because of a faulty valve, city workers were unable to shut off the line near the break and instead had to shut off water for the entire city for more than 48 hours. Hector County residents had to boil their water until June 18, 2022, while repairs were made and tests were run to ensure the water was safe to drink. Many businesses, especially restaurants, were forced to close their doors in the meantime. The break cost the city of Odessa nearly $607,000, with the vast majority of the expense going toward equipment costs. The council members will also discuss leasing the soccer fields and building at Sherwood Park to the Odessa Soccer Association during their work session. Quote, "The use of the city property for providing recreational activities will fulfill a public need in the community," Parks and Recreation Director Max Reyes wrote when adding the item to the agenda. During the council's July 11th work session, there were discussions about moving OSA to Comanche Park after Reyes, Mayor Javier Hoven, and City Attorney Dan Jones alleged former city officials engaged in improper actions on behalf of OSA when OSA left UTPB and moved to Sherwood Park. OSA representatives David Hissaw and Tom Martinez disputed the allegations, which revolved around permits, erecting a building at Sherwood Park, and damage that was caused. Both men said they had permits to prove they and the former city officials acted above board. Both told the council they just want to focus on the children and maintaining a strong program. A subsequent meeting was held between OSA and Reyes, after which Martinez announced on Facebook they'll be staying at Sherwood Park this year and will continue to meet with the city to make long-term plans for playing at Sherwood. During the council's regular session at 6 p.m., Jones plans to discuss withholding $10,200 in payments to the YMCA for the security provided at the city's three pools by a contracted firm. According to interim city manager Agapito Bernal, the security company failed to provide appropriate insurance coverage. According to materials provided to the city council, the city paid one invoice for $10,200, but the security company subsequently failed to get indemnity coverage as required. In addition, the council is scheduled to discuss reimbursing LICU properties for the costs incurred by the company during the complete build-out of the Yukon Road and Grandview Avenue intersection. Kerr estimates the cost will be $4 million and will be paid out on a monthly basis as invoices are submitted. If the costs exceed that amount, city council action would be needed. Samaritan Center. Self-awareness is self-discovery. The story was written by guest contributor Connie Garcia Ball, MA, LPC. What if I said a person could be able to understand themselves without self-doubt or hesitation? Wouldn't that be an ideal situation for everyone? It is possible to begin the journey of enlightening your life with self-awareness. I frequently come across many clients who have a healthy sense of self-awareness. Sometimes there are others unaware of their mind, body, and emotions. It occurs more often than we may believe. However, it is possible to change it for our life experience. When we are self-aware, we notice things more observantly, can pause, and internally look at ourselves mindfully. Therapy can help explore that sense of self-awareness that may help one understand themselves more compassionately and gracefully. Ways to enhance an outlook on life through self-awareness includes asking oneself questions like, where and what am I feeling on my body at this moment? What emotions can I identify presently? What thoughts are coming to mind right now? Are they helping or harming me? What am I telling myself, and how is it affecting my internal beliefs? How significant are my body, emotions, and thoughts influencing my next step? Am I logically responding or emotionally reacting to others or experiences? We are allowed to accept ourselves presently as we are, and then we'll be able to make changes to improve and grow. If we are more in tune with our emotions, thought processes, and body interactions, then we are more likely to gain insight to embracing who we are, and we can make healthier behavioral decisions that align with our desires and values. Self-awareness can be a vital key to opening the door to self-exploration. During therapy, we will continue the process by utilizing appropriate coping skills, managing healthy decision-making, and maintaining self-enhancement to achieve better self-awareness. You have the capability to open your mind to opportunities and change your self-perceptions if you just give yourself permission. Evaluate what your body, mind, emotions, and self-concepts are saying to you. Call Samaritan Center today at 432-563-4144 to schedule a visit with a counselor or a psychiatric nurse practitioner. One Change at a Time, Immunizations. The story was written by Carol A. Cates, Chief Nursing Officer, Odessa Regional Medical Center. When I was a young nurse, I met a person who used a clamshell respirator to help them breathe. When I met this person, they had been using this device for over 20 years. They wore it every day, 24 hours a day, except for a few minutes each day to clean the skin under the device. A clamshell respirator looks almost exactly like the name says, like a clamshell. It was a hard case that fit around the chest and had seals at the neck, waist, and arms to hold out air. The way it worked, it would pull a vacuum in the shell every few seconds to help this person expand their chest so they could inhale. Then it would release the vacuum, collapsing their chest to help them exhale. Without the device, this person became very quickly short of breath to the point they turned blue. To this day, whenever I think of immunizations, I think of this person and their daily struggle to breathe. I think of them because the reason this person had that clamshell respirator was because, as a child, they had polio. That disease so damaged the bones and muscles in that person's chest that they could not expand it without help. That respirator was very cutting-edge technology in the days where polio killed many, many people and caused irreversible musculoskeletal damage to many, many more. But it never fixed the issue because then, and even now, there is no cure for polio. The only way to avoid the ravages that polio causes is prevention, which means immunization. When Jonas Salk in 1955 invented the polio vaccine, he was a national and international hero. People across the planet stood in lines for hours to get that revolutionary vaccination. It was so effective that in 30 years of nursing, I have yet to see an active case of polio. I am saying have yet to because nationally, immunization rates are decreasing. We are starting to see outbreaks of diseases that for much of my nursing career were thought to be completely eradicated in this country, diseases like measles, rubella, and even polio. The diseases we currently immunize for can cause horrible damage if people survive them, from scarring and deformities to chronic health problems, from things like scarred lungs to musculoskeletal issues and infertility. Then there is the "if people survive them" part. World history is rife with stories of the diseases we currently immunize for wiping out entire communities. In some of the third world countries, these diseases still kill and damage people in the thousands each year. I will be the first person to say you have the absolute right to decide what is best for you and your health. But as I say that, I also hope that you are basing your decisions about health care on informed and well-researched sources, not social media, and not someone with something to gain. There are many, but my go-to sources without financial bias that are well-researched are the Centers for Disease Control, the National Institutes of Health, and if you want a good source that is not tied to the U.S. government, look at the Joanna Briggs Institute's website. All these resources demand solid research techniques and do not profit from the studies they present. There are also people, for a variety of reasons like allergies or severe immune system problems, who cannot take immunizations. They depend on the rest of us being immune to keep them safe. So, as you consider immunizations, remember it's not just you. It could be that infant in your home or that elderly neighbor that your immunity helps protect too. Immunizations for many of us have been around so long we have never seen the ravages of the diseases they prevent. And quite frankly, I hope I never see anything even close to the history books. COVID was the worst thing I have ever seen in my career, and I cannot imagine anything worse. I hope getting immunized is not a change, but a habit. But if you are debating whether to get immunized, please speak to your primary healthcare provider about the immunizations that are recommended for you and your loved ones. Ask them questions about the pros and cons of immunization so you can make the best decision for your health.
A tip from the Better Business Bureau: save money and avoid scammers this back-to-school session. Another summer season is winding down to a close as children and parents across the nation prepare themselves for another school year following the summer break. Spending on back-to-school supplies this year is expected to break records, with $41.5 billion, $4.6 billion more than in 2022, going toward clothing, shoes, electronics, and other school supplies. More than half, 55%, of consumers are expected to do most of their shopping online, providing the perfect opportunity for scammers and fraudulent businesses to steal from the public. As the beginning of the school year approaches, Better Business Bureau reminds consumers to be wary of online scams while crossing off items on their back-to-school shopping list. Online purchase scams continue to be the most common type of scam consumers encounter and lose money to across the nation, said Heather Massey, Vice President of Communications for Better Business Bureau, serving the heart of Texas. Scammers know the shopping habits and trends of consumers, as well as their desire to find the best deal by comparatively shopping online. As the back-to-school shopping season picks up, we encourage online shoppers to take their time and verify deals or promotions to help avoid losing money or putting their banking information at risk. Of the over $500,000 Texas consumers reported losing to online purchase scams to Better Business Scam Tracker in 2022, 40% of losses came from interacting with an online seller through social media channels and 23% from websites. This trend continues to be prevalent in 2023, with 36% of total losses to online purchase scams originating from social media and 21% from websites. Additionally, losses to online purchase scams from January through July of 2023 have almost doubled total losses in 2022 at nearly $980,000. Every month, BBB typically receives over 1,000 reports of online purchase scams from consumers across the United States, which has contributed to this scam being identified as the number one riskiest in BBB's annual scam tracker risk report for the past 3 years. Awareness and knowledge of scam tactics are the greatest defenses consumers can utilize against bad actors in the marketplace, said Massey. Trust your gut, and if something doesn't feel right, the best option is to walk away from the interaction, even if that means losing out on a great deal. To assist back-to-school shoppers this season, Better Business Bureau offers the following tips to save money and avoid scams. Check around your home. Start back-to-school shopping right at home by making a list of everything you need and then taking stock of everything you may have stored in desks, drawers, closets, or storage areas. Some supplies may still be left over from last year, saving you from purchasing the same item twice. Research expensive purchases. Before purchasing expensive items such as computers, laptops, or a refrigerator for a dorm, be sure to spend some time researching the brand, reviews of the product, warranty, and prices at multiple locations. Universities often have rules regarding the size and placement of refrigerators in dorms. Check with the college or university housing office on whether an energy-efficient refrigerator is required. Ask for student discounts. Stores and software companies often offer discounts to students with either a student ID or a valid EDU email address. Even if a discount is not advertised, it never hurts to ask. Shop in bulk. If purchasing standard items that are needed at the beginning of each school year, such as binders, notebooks, or writing utensils, buying in bulk is a great way to save money. Shop safely online. When purchasing school supplies online, verify that the URL starts with HTTPS and includes a lock symbol. The S in HTTPS stands for secure and includes additional encryption and security measures than an HTTP website. BBB strongly recommends against inputting bank account information into any website that is not secured. If purchasing from the digital marketplace, take the time to read reviews and feedback from previous customers. The lowest price may not always be the best route. If the company's contact information is not clearly listed, or they have only an email as the point of contact, that is a red flag. You may want to shop elsewhere. BBB strongly recommends against using unprotected payment options when interacting with online marketplaces. If the seller insists on payment via wire transfer or a credit card, that is a sign it may not be a legitimate business. Using a credit card is almost always the best option when purchasing online due to the additional protections they have to dispute and resolve charges when purchased products are not received. For more tips for back-to-school shopping, visit bbb.org/school. If you or someone you know has encountered a scam, report it to BBB Scam Tracker. Information provided may prevent another person from falling victim. Rates Are Rising by Dennis Elam. The Bank of England raised its key interest rate for the 14th time in a row. That overnight rate was near zero at the start of 2022. This is the highest level since 2008. Here is the big picture. Interest rates peaked in this country in 1981 with mortgages around 14% and T-bills higher than that. And yes, with lower returns in safe accounts, people turned to the stock market. In 1982, the DJIA was around 1,000. Now it has topped 35,000. Rates then declined for 39 years, bottoming in March of 2020. But reset your thinking. The interest rate markets are just at the start of another cycle of higher rates. This will eventually draw money from the stock market. One recent headline has investors feasting on higher rates. The view here is that various stock market indexes peaked between November 2021 and April 2022. Stock prices declined into October 22. Since then, prices have rallied in strong fashion, convincing many a new bull market in stocks is back. Don't believe it. 3-month Treasury bills are now yielding 5.25%, so we are duplicating our friends across the pond. Here is the problem. Business and governments partied on low rates, like that would be a forever fixture. Now that debt has to be rolled over. It will do so at a much higher rate of interest. The big news this week was the Fitch downgrade of U.S. debt from AAA to AA+. Janet Yellen, of course, blamed the Trump tax cuts, which is as silly a thing as she has ever said. This week, Rich Dad, Poor Dad author Robert Kiyosaki pronounced the endless increases in U.S. federal debt as simply unsustainable. Treasury debt alone now tops $30 trillion, and that will take a larger share of the federal budget as rates increase. Sooner rather than later, it will consume the budget. Federal debt to U.S. gross domestic product is the highest since World War II, and we are not in a war. Then add Social Security and other entitlements and, well, this won't end well. Crude oil pulled back to $79, but has already bounced back above $81. I suspect $100 is not out of the question. Gasoline futures this year are up from $2.25 to $2.90. The spectacle of an incumbent president using the DOJ to put his likely opponent and former president in jail also comes amid rising rates and a topping stock market. This sets a terrible precedent, a la the Banana Republic idea of simply jailing your political opposition. Apple revenue down for the third quarter. Yellow Freight takes bankruptcy. Chinese real estate bond due 2024-25 trade at 20 to 40 cents on the dollar. Trouble is on the horizon. Traffic stop leads to drug arrest. A traffic stop Thursday afternoon led to the seizure of 4 grams of cocaine, 1 gram of ecstasy pills, and 3 grams of THC cartridges. According to an Odessa Police Department report, detectives saw Paul Navarrete leave his house on Redwood Drive near Bel Air Park around 3 p.m. and pulled him over for a defective tail lamp and for failing to drive in a single lane. The detectives noticed a smell of marijuana coming from the car, so they searched it and found a plastic bundle of cocaine in the center console of the car, the report stated. The detectives found the other drugs inside Navarrete's home, according to the report. Navarrete was arrested on suspicion of possession of a controlled substance in a drug-free zone, a first-degree felony, and two less serious counts of possession of a controlled substance. Navarrete was released from the Ector County Jail after posting surety bonds totaling $60,000 on Friday. The EPA's ambitious plan to cut auto emissions to slow climate change runs into skepticism. Detroit, the U.S. government's most ambitious plan ever to slash planet-warming greenhouse gas emissions from passenger vehicles, faces skepticism both about how realistic it is and whether it goes far enough. The Environmental Protection Agency in April announced new strict emissions limits that the agency says are vital to slowing climate change as people around the globe endure record high temperatures, raging wildfires, and intense storms. The EPA says the industry could meet the limits if 67% of new vehicle sales are electric by 2032, a pace the auto industry calls unrealistic. However, the new rule would not require automakers to boost electric vehicle sales directly. Instead, it sets emission limits and allows automakers to choose how to meet them. If the industry boosts EV sales to the level the EPA recommends, any reduction in pollution could prove more modest than the agency expects. The Associated Press has estimated that nearly 80% of vehicles being driven in the U.S., more than 200 million, would still run on gasoline or diesel fuel. Pointing to surging temperatures and smoke from Canadian wildfires that fouled the air over parts of the U.S. this summer, Dan Becker, director of the Safe Climate Transport Campaign at the Center for Biological Diversity, said, "We need to do a hell of a lot more." He wants the EPA to slash emissions even further. Carbon dioxide and methane levels in the atmosphere keep rising. Scientists say July will end up being the hottest month on record and likely the warmest human civilization has seen. The Earth is only a few tenths of a degree from the goal set out in the 2015 Paris Agreement on climate change of limiting warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius, or 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit, since pre-industrial times. Though a panel of United Nations scientists said in March that there was still time to prevent the worst harm from climate change, the scientists said the world would need to quickly cut nearly two-thirds of carbon emissions by 2035 to avoid weather that is even more extreme. Peter Slovak, a senior EV researcher with the nonprofit International Council on Clean Transportation, has calculated that to cut emissions enough to reach Paris Agreement goals, the proportion of new electric and plug-in hybrid vehicles sold would have to reach 67% by 2030. The EPA has projected 60% by then. The EPA proposal is a really great start to putting us on a Paris-compatible path, said Slowick, whose group provides research and analysis to environmental regulators. But no, it isn't enough to comply with the Paris Accord. The Council has calculated that carbon dioxide pollution from passenger vehicles would have to drop to 57 grams per mile by 2030 to reach the Paris goals. The EPA's preferred regulation would cut those emissions to 102 grams per mile by 2030 and to 82 by 2032. In addition, Slowick cautioned carbon emissions from new gasoline vehicles would have to drop 3.5% each year from 2027 to 2032. The EPA's preferred regulation doesn't set reductions for gas vehicles, but fuel economy standards recently proposed by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration could. What does the EPA say? The EPA contends its proposal will significantly reduce pollution. It estimates that passenger vehicle carbon dioxide emissions would fall 47% by 2055, when the agency expects most gas-powered vehicles to be gone. As the biggest source of pollution in the United States, transportation generates roughly 29% of heat-trapping greenhouse gas emissions, according to the EPA. Passenger vehicles are by far the worst transportation polluters, spewing 58% of that sector's greenhouse gas pollution. The EPA also is proposing big reductions from other sources, including heavy trucks, electric power plants, and the oil and gas industry. Using sales projections from the EPA and industry analysts from 2022 through model year 2032, the AP calculated that Americans will likely buy roughly 60 million EVs, with 284 million passenger vehicles on U.S. roads today. At that pace, only about 22% of them would be electric in 9 years. 2 million are already in use, and vehicles now stay on the road for an average of 12.5 years. Dave Cook, a senior vehicles analyst for the Union of Concerned Scientists, said that even with slow vehicle turnover, studies show the EPA's proposal would be an important step toward a zero-carbon transportation system by 2050. In addition, power plants that fuel EVs, he noted, will be converted to renewable energy, such as wind and solar. We know that EVs provide a compounding benefit as we dramatically cut electric power grid emissions, Cook said. His group is among those pushing the EPA for more stringent standards than the agency is pursuing. The EPA will consider such comments before adopting a final regulation in March 2024. The Alliance for Automobile Innovation, a trade group that represents companies such as General Motors, Ford, and Toyota that make most new vehicles sold in the United States, argues the EPA standards are neither reasonable nor achievable in the time frame covered. The Alliance says the agency is underestimating the cost and difficulty of making EV batteries, including short supplies of critical minerals that also are used in laptops, cell phones, and other items. Sizable gaps in the charging network for long-distance travel and for people living in apartments pose another obstacle. Though automakers continue to downsize engines and produce more efficient transmissions, the Alliance says they need to use their limited resources more on producing EVs than on developing more fuel-efficient technology for gas-powered engines. Studies by the Massachusetts Institute of Technology show that shifting to electric vehicles delivers a 30 to 50% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions over combustible vehicles, depending on how the electricity is derived. Jessica Trancic, an MIT professor of energy systems, said electric vehicles are cleaner over their lifetimes, even after taking into account the pollution caused by the mining of metals for batteries. The university has a website that lists auto emissions by vehicle. Trancic believes that once EV sales accelerate, more people will want them, and the percentages could actually exceed EPA predictions. Sales of EVs, she noted, are growing far faster in many other countries. You often see exponential growth, she said. Another Mega Millions drawing, another night without a jackpot winner. The numbers drawn on Friday night were 11, 30, 45, 52, 56, and the gold ball, 20. Because no one matched all six numbers and won the estimated $1.35 billion jackpot, the top prize increased to $1.55 billion for the next drawing Tuesday night. There now have been 31 straight drawings without a jackpot winner. The last time someone won the Mega Millions jackpot was April the 18th. The $1.55 billion prize could be for a sole winner who chooses the annuity option with payment stretched over 30 years. Most winners opt for a lump sum payment, which would be an estimated $757.2 million on Tuesday. A big slice of those winnings could go toward the federal taxes, while many states also tax lottery payouts. The jackpot is so hard to win because of the 1 in 302.6 million odds of matching the numbers on 5 white balls and a separate mega ball. The odds are better to win smaller prizes, which start at $2. Mega Millions is played in 45 states, Washington, D.C., and the U.S. Virgin Islands. Mexico's oil industry still vexes. The Mexican energy industry has its problems as usual, but there have been a few encouraging developments lately, like small foreign investments and a reduction of flaring and greenhouse gas emissions. Waco economist Ray Perryman and Permian Basin Petroleum Association Executive Vice President Stephen Robertson say the industry has problems it has been unable to solve because of political interference. Mexican economic and energy policy is always problematic, and corruption has often been an issue, Perryman said. At present, however, there are actually some positive signals with regard to the energy sector. For example, Mexico last fall announced it was increasing the degree of reductions in greenhouse gas emissions, and the government has announced some specific actions toward improving conditions. According to the World Bank, flaring volume in Mexico fell significantly in 2022, reversing a trend of rising that had been seen for several years. Total CO2 emissions are also down, according to information compiled by the International Energy Agency. Perryman said renewable generation capacity in Mexico is growing and the government plans future increases. At the same time, coal consumption is falling, he said. Oil and natural gas production in Mexico peaked more than a decade ago, and the geology there is not as favorable for recovering shale gas as it is in many other areas. In fact, U.S. exports of natural gas to Mexico have increased by more than 400% since 2011. The economist said private investment in Mexico's energy exploration and production is small but growing, and total foreign direct investment in Mexico is up significantly. Nonetheless, the combination of relatively high political risk, the relatively high carbon content of the Mayan crude that is predominant in Mexico, and overall uncertainty in the energy sector make sizable international investment unlikely, he said. In short, Mexico faces significant and ongoing challenges, but some of the extreme chatter about the current problems appears to overstate matters based on a review of objective international data. Robertson said President Andrés Manuel López Obrador's actions to nationalize energy production in Mexico, such as the nation's $6 billion purchase of natural gas plants and a wind farm from Spain's biggest power company, Iberdrola Energy, earlier this year, could have a chilling effect on international investment in energy production in the country. Imports in energy from Texas continue to rise, Robertson said. Mexico is still Texas's number one trading partner, and oil and natural gas continue at the top of the export list from Texas to Mexico. In fact, in 2022, Texas exported more oil and natural gas in value to Mexico than in any previous year, according to data promulgated by the U.S. Census Bureau. While the Permian Basin, now accounting for over 40% of the U.S.'s total crude oil production and around 20% of the total domestic natural gas production, Robertson said, a large portion of those exports will originate from wells in the basin. Obituaries. Gregory Kent Chambers of Odessa died on July the 10th. Jack Lynn Cunningham, age 96, of Weatherford, died Tuesday, August the 1st. Lucky P. Newen, age 15, of Midland, passed away on Wednesday, August the 2nd. Occidental Petroleum Corporation President CEO Vicky Holub says the Permian Basin is the core of the highest quality, most complementary assets her company has ever had. There is a unique blend of short-cycle, high-return shale assets in the Permian and in the Rockies, along with lower decline, solid-return conventional reservoirs in the Permian, the Gulf of Mexico, and our international assets, Holub said in Oxy's second quarter earnings call Thursday. 60% of our oil and gas production is from the shale reservoirs and 40% from conventional. Holub said Occidental's Permian production delivered higher operatable and better than expected new well performance, particularly in our two new drilling space units in New Mexico. Our Delaware Basin completion teams shattered our previous record for continuous frack pumping time by nearly 12 hours for a total of 40 hours and 49 minutes, she said. 4 years ago, the same job would have taken about 84 hours. 40 hours back then was unthinkable, but our teams have made this a reality. Holub said over 80% of Occidental's production is in the United States and that it operates abroad in only three countries, Oman, Abu Dhabi, and Algeria. She said Oxy's worldwide full-year 2023 production mix will be around 53% oil, 22% natural gas liquids, and 25% gas, with 70% of the gas being in the U.S. The low carbon ventures business will help Oxy and other decarbonize scale in a way that provides incremental value to our shareholders, she said. Strong second quarter operational performance exceeded the midpoint of our production guidance by 42,000 barrels per day. In the Rocky Mountains, Holub said, our Rockies teams drilled 32% faster on a foot-per-day basis than they did in the first quarter. The team's diligent work set several new Oxy records, including the company record of drilling over 10,400 feet of lateral in only 24 hours, she said. Just 10 years ago, it took the industry an average of 15 days to drill 10,400 feet. Offshore in the Gulf of Mexico, Hubbell said Oxy safely completed seasonal maintenance activities focused on asset integrity and longevity. Senior Vice President, Chief Financial Officer Rob Peterson said impairments for undeveloped non-core acreage and deferred tax impacts from the Algeria production sharing contract were partially offset by an environmental remediation settlement. Our technical and operational excellence continues to drive outperformance across our oil and gas businesses, he said. This enables us to raise our full-year production guidance midpoint to just over 1.2 million barrels per day in anticipation of a strong exit to the year. Peterson said the first half of 2023 was characterized by strong production in the Gulf of Mexico, the Permian Basin, and the Rocky Mountains. We have better anticipated wells and time to market momentum year to date that we expect to be benefiting from in the second half of the year, he said. The third quarter will be the only quarter in the year where our production average is below 1.2 million barrels per day. The Texas abortion ban. A Texas judge ruled Friday the state's abortion ban has proven too restrictive for women with serious pregnancy complications and must allow exceptions without doctors fearing the threat of criminal charges. The ruling was the first to undercut Texas's law since it took effect in 2022 and delivers a major victory to abortion rights supporters, who see the case as a potential blueprint to weaken restrictions elsewhere that Republican-led states have rushed to implement. However, the injunction was immediately blocked by an appeal to the Texas Supreme Court, the state attorney general's office said. The trial court's injunction is ineffective and the status quo remains in effect, spokesperson Paige Wiley said in an email. State District Judge Jessica Mangrum's ruling granted a temporary injunction that prevents Texas from enforcing the ban against physicians who, in their good faith judgment, end a pregnancy that, because of complication, creates a risk of infection or is otherwise unsafe for the woman to continue. The injunction also applies to women who have a condition exacerbated by pregnancy, who can't be effectively treated during their term. It also covers cases where the fetus has a condition that makes it unlikely to survive after birth. For the first time in a long time, I cried for joy when I heard the news, lead plaintiff Amanda Zariski said in a statement. This is exactly why we did this. This is why we put ourselves through the pain and the trauma over and over again to share our experiences and the harms caused by these awful laws. Mangrum's decision said the injunction would run until the completion of the case, which is scheduled for a trial to begin next March, the 25th. However, the state's immediate appeal stays an active Austin judge's attempt to override Texas abortion laws pending a ruling by the Texas Supreme Court, said a statement from First Assistant Attorney General Brent Webster. The immediate impact of Van Grum's decision also was unclear in a state where all abortion clinics have shuttered in the past year. The challenge to the state law is believed to be the first in the U.S. brought by women who have been denied abortions since the Supreme Court last year overturned Roe v. Wade, which for nearly 50 years had affirmed the constitutional right to an abortion. In a six-page ruling, the judge found that portions of the abortion law violated the rights afforded to pregnant people under the Texas Constitution. The court found that the patients challenging the law each experienced emergent medical conditions during pregnancy that risked their health or lives and required abortion care. However, they were delayed or denied access to such a care because of widespread uncertainty about the impact on physicians, the ruling said. Today's ruling should prevent other Texans from suffering the unthinkable trauma our plaintiffs endured, said Nancy Northrup, president and CEO of the Center for Reproductive Rights, which helped bring the lawsuit. During 2 days of emotional testimony in an Austin courtroom, women gave wrenching accounts of learning their babies would not survive birth and being unable to travel long distances to states where abortion is still legal. The challenge, filed in March, does not seek to repeal Texas's abortion ban, but instead aims to force more clarity on when exceptions are allowed under the law, which is one of the most restrictive in the U.S. Under the law in Texas, doctors who perform abortions risk life in prison and fines of up to $100,000. Opponents say that has left some women with providers who are unwilling to even discuss terminating a pregnancy. The majority of U.S. adults, including those living in states with the strictest limits on abortion, want it to be legal at least through the initial stages of pregnancy, according to a poll released in late June by the Associated Press, NORC Center for Public Affairs Research.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.